Dolphins In Depth podcast. I'm Daniel Yafusi. Thanks so much for tuning in. And I know last week I said the Dolphins were in the hunt to be in the hunt, but I think we can say that they're in the hunt in the AFC playoff picture after a fourth straight win, this latest being a 33-10 beatdown of the Carolina Panthers. They improved to 5-7, and they're almost turned around a 1-7 start. You know, they have two games upcoming against the Giants and the Jets, and a bye week sandwiched in there. And they've got a real shot to get to 7-7 with three games left. And if they do that, you know, anything's possible. Really excited to have you guys here tuned in for this episode. We're going to talk a lot about that win, whether, you know, playoff aspirations are really, really legit, as well as Tua after completing his 16th NFL start. You know, it took a while, had some injuries, had to sit behind Ryan Fitzpatrick, but he's kind of finished his quote-unquote rookie year. So we're going to really break that down. And I'm really glad to have this week's guest. We have Cameron Wolf, who's a reporter for NFL Network. Cam, how you doing, man?
What's good, Daniel? How you feeling, man?
I'm doing well, man. I'm doing well. You know, I'm really excited to have you on this episode because you wrote a really interesting piece on Tua and really how this is his time. You know, this, we kind of saw the end of the trade deadline with no, you know, Deshaun Watson. There was kind of Tua's audition. You know, he had, I think it was 9 games that he had. Obviously, he was had the fractured ribs and then the fractured finger that kind of forced him to sit down for a bit. But this second half of the season was really like his auditioning period, most people thought. And he's, you know, 16 starts into his career. You know, he was knocked out of one game, was benched for some other games, but, you know, 16 career starts. And when you look at the numbers, I mean, it's hard not to be impressed. I mean, let me, I know I have it written down right here. 67% completion rate, 3,515 passing yards, 27 total TDs, 12 turnovers. He's 8th in QBR in 2021 this year, and he was 26th in 2020. And really, to me, the most important part to me, and you know, this you can dispute this, a 9-7 record. You know, I know how some people feel about QB wins as a stat, but the quarterback plays such a big role in that I feel like it has to be part of the discussion and part of the equation. And you know, when I wasn't here last year to kind of see his rookie year, his official rookie year, but you know, I've seen, you know, his second year, about half of the second year, which is really the back half of his rookie year. And when I look at it, you know, I've kind of preached this entire time since I've gotten on the beat, you know, I feel like patience was what we needed with Tua. You know, he's a rookie. I understand he's polarizing. His contemporaries have maybe accelerated, maybe grown a little bit faster than him, but I think patience was really key here. And I have to phrase it this way. If Tua had these numbers, if Tua played out the entirety of his, you know, his first year in 2020, and he had all these numbers with the 9-7 record, I mean, as a Dolphins fan, like, you have to be encouraged by that, man, right?
Absolutely. I think that when you look at what Tua's done, you can't be disappointed at those numbers. Like, I'm not a big QB wins guy, just to be real, but I think there is something to your team winning behind, you know, a competent quarterback play. And I love the QBR stat because, you know, I used to work at ESPN, and that was a stat that I love because it showed you beyond just the box score, completion percentage and different things like that. And I looked that up this week and I saw that he was, you know, in the top 10 in QBR this year, ahead of Patrick Mahomes, ahead of Lamar Jackson. That kind of really surprised me. But when you look at what he's been able to do, I think that they've really been efficient. And so, like, it's not sexy the way that Tua plays.
It is
not. And that's something that I think he gets a lot of knocks about. But my thing is, I've watched this quarterback, and I've watched this development, particularly since he got drafted here. And when he was drafted, he never had a big arm. He was never the most athletic guy. So that element of him has not changed. So to critique him on something that he never was, to me, seems a little foolish. I mean, I know that we're in a society where everything kind of gets compared. And like you mentioned, Justin Herbert had an amazing rookie year. He's balling. Everybody's like, oh, the Dolphins made a mistake. Now Joe Burrow's cooking. And it's like, why doesn't Tua look as sexy as these dudes? Well, he got to run his own battle. You know, he got to run his own race. So I think that there's little that Tua's done so far that makes me think, hey, this guy can't eventually be a guy you can win with. The question eventually, can he be a guy you win because? That's a different question. But You know, I look at what he has shown over his first 16 games. Why are we so eager to give up on him already?
Yeah, one thing that sticks out to me, you know, I'm not sure if you've heard Bucky Brooks say this, but if you see him on TV, like, he'll kind of make this analogy, like, is a quarterback pulling the guys or is he getting pulled? And I think that that's the thing that I've really been keying on. I think he's doing all this in spite of what's around him. You know, we know this offensive line is not a very good offensive line. I think that they made some progressions in recent weeks and whatnot, but they're still far from being the offensive line that you'd really want to surround a young quarterback with. We know that Devontae Parker has been in and out of the lineup. Will Fuller has barely played this season. I mean, outside of Jalen Waddle and Mike Gesicki, I mean, who is he really throwing to? You know, Matt Collins has stepped up. Albert Wilson has been more involved, but he really doesn't have a bona fide set of pass catchers. So I'll say all that to say he's really doing this in spite of his surroundings, which is what's really impressive to me. And, you know, they don't really have a running game. They're really putting it on him. I mean, the short passing that they're running with, that's pretty much their running game. And for him to do what he's doing, I think it's really impressive. You know, we can do the what if game, but I do really wonder, you know, if he didn't get knocked out for three games with those bruised ribs, I mean, is there a chance that they may have beaten the Raiders? Is there a chance that they may have beaten the Colts? You know, I know he came back to losses against the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Falcons, but if like some of those balls kind of bounce the Dolphins away, which is what they were really saying during that losing streak, they were saying, hey, we're close. I mean, if, you know, maybe if they're 6-6 now, or whatever the case may be, I mean, does the perception of Tua and kind of what I want to lead to now, does this season kind of change to you?
Yeah, I think that, and you mentioned earlier about the element of the story I wrote about this being Tua's time. Like, let's be real with it. They have flirted. They have done their whole deal with Deshaun Watson. It, you know, Tua's got to feel like, hey, my girl's been looking. You know, my girl's been looking. So he got to know to an extent that there's something to prove. But I'm with you. I look at the whole totality of it. I know it's a quarterback league and we focus so much about the quarterback, but you can't look at this Dolphins team and say, oh, they're a quarterback away. And that has been my big issue in the whole landscape. I think they have maybe the worst offensive line in the league. They have a skill position group that hasn't stayed healthy all year with Devontae Parker and Will Fuller, but we look at that quarterback position. So that shapes the lens that we see everything throughout this team. And when they lost, everything compounded. And 1-7, I'm not going to lie, I never saw that coming. And I think the biggest change in the perception is it shifts from just the quarterback to then it goes on the coach and then the GM. And I remember at the 1-7 point, I had people texting me across the league like, are they going to have to fire everybody? You know, is Brian Flores going to be going? Is Chris Greer going to be going? Because when people lose jobs. That's just the way it goes. So I think the biggest thing that this win streak has is maybe get some people a little bit more job security. You know, I know Chris Greer and Brian Flores don't read the task, but they have family that does. Yep. And I think the family feels a little bit more easy Thanksgiving after a 4-game winning streak and not seeing as many articles about how their coach or how their dad or how their uncle or how whoever is going to get fired. So I think that's the biggest thing. They have 4 games ahead, and I'm sure we'll talk about that later, where they could make a playoff push. But at the bare minimum, I think they've changed the perception to this is one of the worst teams in the league. And how did this happen to, okay, what are they going to do over these last 6 or 7 games to reshape how we think about this team?
Yeah, and you make an interesting point earlier about, you know, being a quarterback away. You know, when training camp opened up and, you know, we really started this season, I think that was most people's, you know, perception about the Dolphins. I mean, last year they were 10-6. The defense led the league in takeaways. You know, they were young on the offensive side, but the thought was, you know, if this defense can continue to play at that standard and then you put Deshaun Watson with this team, oh, this is definitely a AFC contender. And as the season progressed, you know, some of the warts and some of the shortcomings of the team were kind of exposed. And it was like, this team isn't really a quarterback away. But now it seems like we're getting back to that 2020 formula where the defense is playing lights out. You know, the offensive line is still young, but it does seem like if you put a very, very good quarterback on this offense, he might be able to elevate the unit. So, I mean, you know, where do we really stand with that? You know, I did find, you know, this really interesting stat from Mike Sando, who works for The Athletic. And he said this season, Miami is 5-0 when allowing 17 points or fewer. And they're 0-7 in all the other games where they allow more than 17 points. And over the past two seasons, the Dolphins are 12-0 when allowing greater 17 points or more. And they're 3-3, I believe, in all the other games. So this is still a team that's predicated on the defense, and to some extent, still predicated on the special teams. I mean, even as complimentary and as well-rounded of a victory that was against the Panthers, I mean, it still did start with, you know, a blocked punt for a touchdown, Xavien Howard, you know, intercepting a pass and bringing it all the way to the 9-yard. I mean, this is still an offense that still relies on that defense to put them in opportunistic situations. But, you know, is the offense – pretty much is the quarterback, are they a quarterback away? I mean, it does seem like that is really the thought process of the front office. You know, regardless of what happens this season, they're still going to go to the offseason and say, hey, we have all this money. We have this draft capital. I mean, if we just insert a quarterback that's maybe a little more talented, has a little more of a ceiling, can we get to that next spot? I mean, what do you think about that?
No, absolutely. I think you're right on the money with that conversation. In fact, I think the Dolphins came into this year with the mindset of a lot of fans that they felt like they were closer than they actually were. You know, I could tell by their moves. You know, you trade, and some fans have a different perception of how this trade, you know, equivalents to, but you trade essentially a first round pick, an extra first round pick to move up for Jaylen Waddle, who's actually been great. But you don't do that for a receiver unless you feel like you are right in the cusp of winning. So I think they believe that with improved weapons, an improved offensive line, improved Tua, we should be a contender. And on paper, it looked like that. But I think we learned that growth is not linear. And growth does not always happen in a straight line. So I think we're seeing some of the elements of that defense last year, but it's hard to consistently stay at an elite level, particularly in a turnover perception. Turnovers are not something that translate year to year as easy as, you know, people may think. So I think that's one element of defense that's hard to continue to replicate. And that's why you don't see many teams that are defense led that are longstanding contenders. So it's got to start with the quarterback. And I actually talked to somebody in the organization earlier this year before the Deshaun Watson stuff happened. And one thing they kept telling me is that, yes, there's issues, but quarterback hides, like elite quarterbacks hide a lot of your issues. And that's one thing that I think that there is fair criticism on Tua. Will he ever be elite? And I do agree that we need more time, but that's a reasonable question given what we've seen from him. What is his ceiling? And can you win without an elite quarterback? Yes, it just makes it harder. So I think you look at this team and yes, their offensive line is horrific, but would they look better with an elite quarterback? Yeah, sure. Elite quarterback might be out there and slinging. They wouldn't be great, but they might look better. So I think the thing they're going to have a conversation about this offseason is how much of an upgrade is making this move, and is it worth essentially mortgaging our franchise to do so? Because you make that all-in move, you know, beyond the legal issues, which is a whole nother situation with Deshaun Watson, you have to decide, hey, if we make this move, are we ready now? And I think that's going to be an internal conversation that they're going to have this offseason. I don't know what the answer is. I would love to see more time for Tua to me and kind of build around him and really build those pieces. But you can't ignore the teams that are winning right now. Patrick Mahomes, you know, Josh Allen, all these guys have a guy that's a scary playmaker. And we haven't seen that elite level of Tua yet. And whether you're a Tua fan or not, you have to admit that he does look different than those guys and how he plays.
Yeah, that's all fair. When you mention growth not being linear, I think that's a great point, because I think that a lot of people, a lot of fans saw this year three of, you know, the Flores Greer partnership and saying it's kind of playoffs or bust. And I never perceived the season as that, because Tua was so young. And because he took over in the middle of, you know, that his rookie season, but that second rebuild year. So I was, you know, I predicted them to go, I believe, 10-7 and miss the playoffs. But I thought that if Tua progressed and, you know, was kind of the reason that they were winning these games, and it wasn't like they were relying on the defense so much, I would think that that'd be a successful season. Like, if they went 10-7, if Tua improved all of his numbers, still, you know, still had some growing pains, but by the end of the season was playing well and looked like a above average to good quarterback, I thought that that's actually a success, and you're setting yourself up for, you know, his year four of the rebuild of making the playoffs, which is why, you know, I know a lot of fans, I mean, the fans deserve to be disappointed in a 1-7 start, because I think that there's no excuses for that. You know, they have to be held accountable for that. And to Forrest's credit, to Tua's credit, to the team's credit, they've been able to turn it around. But, you know, I keep on saying, you know, the season isn't 8 games. It's not half a season. It's not done in 1 month. It's, you know, it's a marathon, not a race. And, you know, I still think that if they're able to work their way to 500 and Tua continues to play the way he is, I still think that this season is, you know, can and it would be redeemed in a sense, despite them maybe not making the playoffs.
Yeah, I think one interesting element of this season is, you know, beyond the playoffs. Like, to me, the biggest thing is seeing Tua and getting a firm evaluation of him throughout the rest of the year. And one thing that I would hope that fans and maybe people who watch this team try to recalibrate their mindset is I think early on in the draft process, Tua got a lot of comparisons, and I think they were unfair to like a Russell Wilson type player. Mm-hmm. And to me, he's never really been that player. I think if you're looking at a ceiling, you're looking at a guy like Drew Brees, who his superpower, to me, Tua's superpower is his accuracy, his command, his pocket feel. And he's shown some of those things, but those things are rarely sexy. Those things are rarely going to be on SportsCenter. You're not going to have this guy was accurate with this pass. That's not going to, you know, we don't get excited about that. We get excited about 70-yard touchdowns. So I think that when you look at what you're seeing from Tua's growth, you have to ask yourself, how much growth do I need to see to be satisfied? And this is something I've asked Brian Flores this season, and I don't think he's really truly given a firm answer, but how long is enough time to know exactly what you have in a guy and be decided upon that? Because to me, 16 games is not enough, but I also am not seeing Tua every day in practice. And we're in a different society where, you know, I think a lot of Dolphins fans, it's before you, Daniel, but a lot of Dolphins fans were frustrated because the Ryan Tannehill era was here, and they spent 7 years trying to figure out if he was the guy. And he left, and maybe he's the guy in Tennessee, you know? So, like, it's hard to find, like, an amount of time to have a time frame. But then you see Arizona, who gets rid of Josh Rosen after 1 year, and that was the right decision. So it's, I think you're looking at a situation where there are two extremes of fans. There are people who are, I'm Tua no matter what, and there are people who I'm out on him. And it's something unique. It's a very rare type thing where there's such extremes. And I feel like I'm somewhat in the middle. I lean probably more to I've seen enough in Tua to see more. Like, I want to see more, but I have worries. You know, his durability worries me. That's probably my biggest worry. I can't have my quarterback not on the field. But you know, I think if you wrap your mind around, can he be successful in your mindset if he's not throwing 60, 70 yard bombs? If the answer is no, then you got to get another quarterback, because I don't think he's ever going to be this big play, you know, type like fans who are saying, oh, if we get a better offense line, he'll be throwing bombs. I don't see that. I don't see that being predicated on his game. I think his game, like I said, his superpowers, accuracy, command, pocket feel. If you feel like you can win with that, you have to build around it, and you have to have the type of offense line and playmakers for it to succeed. So this offseason is going to be really important for how Brian Flores and Chris Greer view this. Do they want this team to be built around an elite quarterback and we're going all in and we'll have holes in other areas, but we feel like our quarterback is going to be able to be Superman and fill them? Or do we say, hey, we're going to focus on filling the holes and we think we have a good enough quarterback to win as a team? I think there's only two paths. You got to go one or the other.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you that at this point, durability has to be the only concern. I mean, not the only concern, but the main concern, because he's getting it done. You know, I know that some of the defenses haven't been great. You know, the team has been kind of beating up on some below average teams, but they're getting it done. You know, I feel like that's kind of step one. You know, you want your quarterback to play well against maybe the lesser competition. And then, you know, as you continue to build this team, you hope that in the years to come, you can start to be able to compete with the Buffalo Bills type team and some of the other upper echelon teams in the AFC. But again, I mean, it is going to be interesting to see because, I mean, for all we know, the front office could kind of have already made up their mind. I mean, we truly don't know. And this could maybe be all for nothing. Maybe Tua could be auditioning for another team. But again, you know, I was thinking, you know, I don't think anybody thought that they were going to be able to rattle off this many wins and then find themselves back in the AFC playoff picture. And truth be told, that may be just as much of an indication of how, like, just up in the air the AFC is, that the fact that they were 1-7, they've won a couple games, and now they're back in the playoff picture. But that's besides the point. But again, I was initially of the thought that when they started 1-7, the second half of the season was just about Tua and whether he could continue to develop. But now it's about Tua's development and, hey, can we maybe get like a 6th or 7th playoff seed? So again, first half of the season was definitely tough on all of us, you know, the team, the people that cover the team. But as it actually is pretty cool to be able to say, hey, at least we're going to go in December. We're going to be covering games that actually matter.
Absolutely. And I'm not there every day like you guys are, but I always tell people, like people in the building and people outside of the building, like, our job's a lot easier when the team is winning. Like, we don't root against it. I'll speak for myself. Maybe some people do. I don't root against the team. Like, we're not fans of the team, but it's a lot easier when people are smiling and want to talk to you rather than you have to pry answers and they're giving you cliches just from a work perspective. So it's good, you know, to be around the building, have people happy, and actually go into December where it matters. Cause trust me, I was here in 2019 and it was miserable. That first half of the year, I'm walking in the locker room. Dudes are looking up flights, trying to go other places. Dudes are coming in the locker room. I remember guys are asking me in the locker room who this dude is. They just claimed him. They just claimed him off waivers. He's an offensive lineman. I think he went to Oklahoma. His name is blah, blah. Okay, all right. Appreciate you, man. Like, that was it all season. So you don't want to deal with that. So I think this year, you know, whether they make the playoffs or not, there's positive movement towards them going, you know, going and making a push and being in the hunt. And yeah, I mean, let's be real. Look at their schedule. The Giants, the Jets, you got the Saints who have been trending downward, and the Titans without Derrick Henry. We could definitely, I wouldn't be shocked if we're looking at 9-7 and, you know, we're back here week 18, they're playing the Patriots for a playoff spot. So I could definitely see it. So it's not over. All, you know, I'm telling you, there's a chance. But, you know, more than anything, I think the positive momentum and the growth for Tua are things that we should take out of this 4-game winning streak.
Yeah, we're definitely going to talk a little bit more about, you know, this upcoming slate. But yeah, I mean, it definitely has been a lot easier to talk to guys. You know, you even see Brian Flores cracking some smiles, cracking jokes, laughing. So that's definitely been good to see. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, still going to have Cam Wolf with me. We're going to talk about the final 5 games coming up, as well as preview Sunday's game against the New York Giants. Stay with us.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's going on, everybody? Still here on the Dolphins In Depth podcast with Cam Wolf. Really enjoyed the first half of our conversation, just breaking down Tua, this really miraculous turnaround and this 4-game winning streak that has them back in the hunt. You know, I was looking at some ESPN and NFL Network playoff graphics, and hey, I mean, the Dolphins are there. They're at the bottom, but they're there, and they got a chance to you know, rise up in the standings. And, you know, again, starting with this upcoming week, you know, the Dolphins haven't had their bye yet, so they're going to play the Giants. They're going to have a bye week, and then they're going to host the Jets on the other side of that bye week. And I believe, if I'm, you know, I could be wrong, I believe I'm right here. I mean, they're 1.5 games out of that 7th seed. Again, there's There's a lot of teams in front of them. I think that there's 12 AFC teams that are 500 or better right now, which is why I say that the Dolphins have, you know, a lot of teams to kind of leapfrog if they want to get into that playoff spot. But man, five games left. You know, if I'm from start to finish, it's Giants, Jets, Saints on Monday night, I believe, Tennessee, and then the season finale at home against the Patriots. I mean, what percentage are you giving them to, I mean, really to make the playoffs? I mean, some people are saying that they could maybe run the table, which would literally be a historic feat for them to start 1-7 and then win the final, what is it, 10 games or 9 games. I mean, that would literally be a historic feat. I don't think any team has started 1-7 and made the playoffs, but what odds are you giving them to do that?
No team has ever started 1-7 make the playoffs. Trust me, I looked it up just in case. But I think that, you know, I actually love this time of year. I'm a numbers guy. Yeah. So every year in December, when there's somebody in the hunt, when the team I'm covering the hunt, there's always the playoff percentages. And I'm telling you, fans eat it up about how much percentage chance their team has to make the playoffs. And if they win, what this means. Well, I looked up some percentages. The New York Times has already started this thing. It's playoff percentages. I don't think ESPN's done this yet. That's one of my favorite ones. But New York Times, they'd give the Dolphins a 3% chance to make the playoffs right now. 3%. It's a chance. But if they win out, that number raises to 89%, which you know, like we said, the schedule is right in front of you. It's a situation where it's reasonable, but the Dolphins are essentially in must-win mode the rest of the year. Like, I don't think they can get in with a loss. I think right now 10-7 is probably what it's going to take, and there's no guarantee that 10-7 gets you in. When you look at how this defense has been playing, we talked a lot about Tua, but let's keep it real. The defense has been the big reason why the Dolphins have had this four-game winning streak. I mean, Xavien Howard, we know about him. He's a baller. He's the best player on the team. But the young safeties with Javon Holland and Brandon Jones, the way they've been kind of taking over and really this team becoming more of a blitz-oriented team, that was one of the most frustrating parts of the first half of the season to me as I watched this defense last year with a lot of the amoeba style and confusing defenses. I remember Jared Goff was about to call his mama after the game they played on last year. And that game alone might have made Sean McVay say, nah, I'm done with you, dog. And this year they just were not having that tight pressure. And right around 1-7, they started to heal it back up. The young DB started to get it together, and they transitioned more from the McCourty and Rowe safety deal they had early in the season to more Holland and Brandon Jones. And then now Jalen Phillips is coming on tight. So I think this defense is looking back like a top end, you know, top 10, top 12 defense that we thought they were going to be coming into the year. So with that, you can win in November and December and January. And, you know, we're looking at a lot of teams. I look at the schedule. There's a lot of teams that with quarterbacks that throw a lot of interceptions.
Starting with the one
this upcoming week against the Giants. You know, you look at Daniel Jones, Zach Wilson, really any of the Jets quarterbacks, Zach Wilson, Joe Flacco, Matt White, Mike White, whoever they throw out there, they throw a lot of picks. You know, there's a lot of, you know, so that to me is a lot of game plans where the defense can really show its prowess. And if Tua takes care of the ball, you know, averages 24 points a game, they should be in the mix to win all of those games. So I definitely look at this as they can win. They can run the table. It's going to be hard, but they can run the table. But they can't afford any slip-ups. They can't afford any off days to do so. It's still going to be a tough challenge. I mean, I look at that AFC playoff picture, and I've got to imagine that you're going to look at two AFC North teams making it, with probably the Ravens and the Bengals, both of those teams looking pretty good. You look at the AFC South, you know, the Titans, you know, that's a team that they have a big, I think they're 8-3 at this point or 8-4, something like that. Yeah. And they're, you know, they're trying to chug along, but I think they've got a good handle on it. And the Colts are coming on strong too. And then you look out, in the the West,
yep.
And you got a three-way battle. Somebody's going to come out of that division.
I mean, there's a good chance that they might send two as well.
They might send two too. So yeah, you're running out of teams. And in the East, you look at the Bills and the Patriots. Man, the both of those teams at the top. Hard for me not to see both of those teams making the playoffs. So there's only seven spots. It's more than six, But it is, you know, you somebody's going to have to get knocked out. So I don't know who that team is, but I think the Dolphins can't afford to lose a game. They got to go 10-7 to at least give them themselves a chance.
Yeah. And, you know, I was talking to somebody earlier and I said the Dolphins don't really control their destiny per se. But they do, like you said, they do give them themselves a really strong chance to make the playoffs if they can win out. You know, and like you said, the margin for error, I mean, I can't even say it's slim. It's infinitesimal. It's gone. And, you know, where I think what really might bite them is when you look up in the standings and you see the Raiders, you see the Colts. Those are two teams that they lost to. So exactly. If for some reason you have like a head-to-head battle or a three-way, tiebreakers start to come in. I mean, that could hurt them. One thing that, you know, I feel like we shouldn't even be going this far, but you know, it's a podcast. We can talk crazy stuff. We can start to dream.
Hey, Brian Flores don't have to listen. One day at a time, Brian Flores. He'll got to.
We don't
listen.
Do that here. We look five weeks ahead. Somebody brought this up. And I didn't want to acknowledge it, but I have to. Someone said that if the Dolphins win their next, I guess it would be four games, there is a chance that that Week 18 game could maybe be for the division. I mean, the Bills and the Patriots still have to play each other twice. So they could beat up on each other. The Patriots got a pretty tough schedule coming up. I believe they play the Colts. They play the Bills twice. And they have another tough game in there. Well, the Dolphins, is there any shot that had? I mean, that would literally be storybook.
I tend to say
it doesn't happen.
I don't want to throw flames on that. I just don't see that happening as far as division. I think the Patriots are what are they 7-4, 8-4? They're somewhere in that mix. And that's a team that I don't really see. They're playing really, really good football. So I don't really see them falling off at this point. You look at that Bills team, they're pretty good. They're playing this week. So it's the Patriots 8-4 and the Bills 7-4. So the Patriots win that game. They're already at 9 wins. So I don't see the playoffs, but I could see a scenario where, I mean, I don't see the division, but I could see a scenario week 18, you're going in New England's trying to fight for maybe a first round bye if they had things going or they're trying to clinch the division. They're tied with the Bills and the Dolphins are fighting for a playoff spot. Both teams got something to play for, and that would be a fun matchup. And you know, Tom Brady's not there anymore, but I tell you, there always seems to be something when New England comes down to Miami that they run into, you know, whether the Miami Miracle, you know, or whatever. That always is the Patriot place of horror. And how about those last two games? You got the Titans with Ryan Tannehill, Ryan Tannehill's potential revenge, quote unquote. And then you got the Patriots, the arch nemesis Patriots. Those could be two games you have to win against playoff teams to get in. That's going to really test the mettle of this team. But, you know, we hope for it. That would be really fun to see the Dolphins, but they got to win these next four games that aren't as fun to get to those last two.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, those last two games, those are going to be fun games, especially if there's a lot on the line. But like you said, it starts this Sunday with the Giants, a Giants team that, you know, I want to say had a surprising win because I don't think anything is surprising in the NFC East, but they came away with a big win over the Eagles. Obviously, the Dolphins with that four-game win streak. I believe, obviously, the Dolphins are favored. I'm trying to see how many points. I think it's favored by 2.5.
Two and a half, 3 points.
Yeah, this seems really similar to the Jets game where it's like, well, I mean, obviously, you know, Joe Flacco is a lot more experienced than Daniel Jones, but it seems a game like stick to your bread and butter, blitz him, make him uncomfortable. He's probably good for a turnover or two, play clean football on offense and come away with a methodical 10 point win. I mean, it's hard for me to, the way that they're playing right now, it's hard for me to envision the Giants being able to score a lot of points and making this a shootout. Obviously, Saquon Barkley is one of the best running backs in the game. I don't know how healthy he is coming back from that ankle injury. You know, the Giants do have some playmakers, but it just seems like another game where the Dolphins defense will have its way. The offense will do enough, and, you know, it won't be pretty contested once we get to the fourth quarter. What do you think?
Nah, I'm with you. You know, I'm not a betting man. Can't bet at the NFL job, but that minus 2.5, minus 3, that's looking good to me. If I'm believer in the Dolphins, I would love that because you know, like you said, I'm not convinced this Giants team is very good. You know, I actually had this past weekend also. I had my three TV set up. I was watching Red Zone. I was watching the Dolphins game, and I had the Dolphins Panthers game. I had the Eagles Giants game up, and man, that was an ugly game. The Eagles played about the worst game I could find somebody to play, and they still had a chance to win it at the end. I think Hurts threw four interceptions, and they still had a chance at the end to potentially win the game. So I don't envision Tua throwing four interceptions this week, but I think the Giants need that sort of that sort of lackluster offense to win a game. I just don't see it with their offense. So I'm with you. I think the Dolphins should win this game. I still think it'd probably be a little low scoring. The Giants defense is starting to play better as of late. But if they do what they've been doing, you know, with a lot of pressure on Daniel Jones, he's a panic quarterback. I like, you know, that's one of the quarterbacks where if things get chaotic, he panics, man. And you know, he'll be one of those guys where he's like, okay, somebody's gonna catch this ball. You know, I'm throwing it up. Somebody's gonna catch
It might not be
it. Might not be get my guy,
somebody's
but
gonna
somebody's
catch
gonna
it.
catch this ball. And so I could definitely see a 2 or 3 interception day for Daniel Jones. So yeah, I think the Dolphins should feel really good going into this game. I want to see continued progress for them running the football. I like what I saw from Philip Lindsay
Me too.
this past week. I want to see him get some more snaps. I don't want to jinx it, but the offensive line is starting to, you know, not be as bad as they were early in the season. And like I said, the offense, although it's not great to look at, like it's not aesthetically pleasing a lot of times, they've tried to mold it to really play around their weaknesses. So I think the Dolphins actually match up pretty well with the Giants, and they've actually stopped the run as well pretty good over the last couple of weeks. So that'll help them with Barkley coming to town.
Yeah, definitely. And kind of a interesting subplot is Joe Judge and Brian Flores going head to head. Obviously, they spent several years in New England as assistants. Patrick Graham was the defensive coordinator in Miami for one season, that 2019 rebuild year. And obviously, he had a connection with them in New England. Well, I wonder if maybe the game is a little bit closer than we imagined, just because I know that there was a quote from Joe Judge, and he it was a really lengthy, really nice quote, just speaking about the relationship that he formed with Brian Flores. And he's like, hey man, like when you're kind of at the bottom of the totem pole, you guys are grinding. I mean, you talk about all this stuff. You talk about the draft, you talk about tendencies, you talk about philosophies. So I wonder if maybe there's still a little bit of, you know, from the early 2000s or 2010s where Joe Judge is like, hey, I remember 11 p.m. me and Brian Flores were talking about so and so. I know he's gonna go with this on third down. I wonder how much that familiarity kind of plays a role in maybe how the game goes in terms of a matchup standpoint.
Yeah, there's nothing like the broke homies, right? You know, the broke homies that you had back in the day when y'all was trying to get the oodles and noodles together or get some money together for you know, gas money. Ain't nothing like that. I still got some boys back in the crib that I hung out with that when we were broke. So I feel Brian Flores and Joe Judge on that. I think there's a lot of familiarity here. Like we always hype up the Brian Flores, Bill Belichick matchups, you know, because it's the mentor versus the protege. But you gotta think that Flores and Judge are even closer. Because, like you said, they were peers at one time. They came up the same way. And, you know, I know they talk a lot, and there's, you know, different sort of philosophies. They like some of the same players. I even remember talking to the draft process. I was talking to people who were convinced that the Giants thought that the Dolphins wanted DeVonta Smith over Jalen Waddle, and they both ended up loving those Alabama receivers. The Giants ended up loving DeVonta Smith, and the Eagles jumped them. So they kind of all they have similarities in the type of players they like, this type of styles. They've all got that kind of hard discipline mindset. So I think that you're going to look at two coaches who are going to know some tendencies. You know, there's going to be a lot of film watching this week. I wouldn't be surprised if you see a little, you know, trickeration. You know, when you have a guy that you know well, you try to bring some out the bag. You know, I got to go in my bag. You know, and Joe Judge is a special team coordinator at heart. So I'm looking, you know, maybe the Giants have a special teams trick play or something this week up their sleeve. So that'll be fun to watch, you know, although they don't directly coach each other, you know, because Flo is not calling plays and Judge doesn't either. Mm-hmm. But I think you're looking at two guys who are having their teams built in similar mindsets, and that can make that fun, you know, Sunday, especially if it's a close matchup in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, you know, Joe Judge said that he can see that the Dolphins are really taking on the persona and the, you know, the personality of Brian Flores and the way that they play. And, you know, Brian Flores was really, you know, he spoke really glowingly about his relationship with Patrick Graham as well as Joe Judge. But then at the end of his quote, at the end of his statement, he said, "Hey, but they're coming to compete. So we got to come to compete as well." And that's what they're going to do on Sunday. You know, this brings us to the end of another edition of the Dolphins in Depth podcast. I want to thank Cam so much for joining me. Really enjoyed having you on. You know, I know a couple of years back, we were connected through the Sports Journalism Institute. And I remember reaching out to you asking for some advice. I really appreciated that. And you know, it's cool that I've been able to make this move down here, and you've been really supportive. And I appreciate that, man.
Yeah, you've been killing it, man. Appreciate you having me on, man. I hope everybody's following Daniel's work, man. He's doing great work out here, putting out content that y'all need to read as Dolphins fans. You know, just don't get on the blogs and take your own takes. Listen to somebody who's actually in the building every day with his all with the smart takes. So definitely appreciate you for having me on. And hopefully the Dolphins will ring out some wins so I can spend some more time down here with y'all at the end of the season.
Not much love, and yeah, we're going to see about that. They got a good shot to keep it going before the bye week this Sunday. To the listeners, thanks so much for tuning in. We'll be back, even on a bye week, we'll be back next week to talk some more Dolphins. Until then, you guys take care.